is a member of the Mud Puppy Games Network.
Now that you've cast out the evil sorcerer and taken his treasures and searched his colon for gems, it's time for you to kick back and listen to the Save a Half Sideshow.
The Save for Half Sideshow, where it's all fun and games until somebody takes a four-sider to the eye.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Save for Half Sideshow. Episode 3.5.
Or 3.5.
Three and a half. With you is the guy who's half right half of the time, DM Mike. And he is joined by the guy who is half wrong half of the time, DM Corbett.
Yeah.
And DM Liz, who is always right half of the time.
You know it.
And with the special guest, DM Bad Mike, my evil twin, who is never right half the time.
No, I'm actually waiting for episode 3.75. The 3.5 stuff is...
Well, that may be coming if this one takes too long, you know. So, what is this? This is a side podcast, but still part of the Save for Halves podcast. These will be irregularly made and basically involve answering emails, interviews, and other things that for whatever reason we decide that the full show can't really deal with sufficiently. So if you don't like emails and you don't like interviews, be free to skip the sideshows. So that leaves us here, where we're going to talk about what we've done in gaming.
What have we done?
What have we done in gaming this couple of weeks? We'll start with Corbett.
I actually went to the library and sat down with a bunch of 14-year-olds and drew pictures and talked about D&D in the old days to kids playing 5th edition.
So, oh, that's awesome!
That you didn't get arrested. Awesome!
Yeah, it does seem a little creepy and weird. But it was fun. Hey, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and as I have said over and over again, we got to get the kids playing, you know, tabletop, or we'll go the way of model trains or something.
Hey, kids, I got a first edition DMG. Come on, let's get the real stuff over here.
Ooh, does it have the demon cover?
Oh, man. It makes it worse that I show up in a van. It really does.
Are there at least windows?
Is there windows? Yes, windows.
There are some windows, okay. But...
It's locked out.
The top. Anyway. Well, that's cool, Corbett. Really, seriously. Okay, well, Bad Mike, what have you been doing?
Well, I was doing the same kind of things you were doing, which I got back from a first GaryCon. I worked at the I didn't actually game a lot, but I got to meet a lot of people that I had not met before, because there's a lot of people in Wisconsin that don't make it down to Texas for cons. So I talked to a lot of people that I had never met before in person. I worked at the Frog God Games booth and got to sell a lot of Frog God Games Swords and Wizardry goodies. It was just kind of a really, really fun schmooze meet and greet weekend for me.
Yeah, we got to meet a lot of people, including lots of people who have heard us on podcasts, like DM Mosshade, Trevor, DM Kojo, lots of guys and gals who stopped us in the dealer room, and we appreciated meeting them all.
Yeah, it was really nice to be able to meet people whom we only had an opportunity to correspond with either through email or Facebook. So, yeah, that was a good thing for us, too, going to GaryCon for the first time. And, yeah, like you, Bad Mike, we didn't play a whole lot. I think we were only in two game sessions. We were in one on Friday and one on Saturday, and that was it. The rest of the time, we were just kind of going around and talking to people and hanging out and enjoying ourselves.
And we killed our characters and in both of them.
Yes.
Well, I have one really cool fanboy moment there because, as you know, I help run NTRPG Con, so I've become a little jaded to special guests. I've met quite a few of the founding fathers of our hobby. But one gentleman I had never met before was named Mike Carr, and he's actually the author of my favorite D&D module, B1 In Search of the Unknown, as well as many, many other. He has tons of skins on the wall when it comes to gaming and design. And so I got to meet him and have him sign my copy of B1 that Darlene had already signed. So that was really, that's going to go in a place of honor in my room.
Awesome.
If players in my B1 game this year are nice, I'll let them touch it. I'll bring it there and pass it around. But it was just, he was a really super nice guy. And I don't really fanboy out on people, but I kind of fanboyed on him because he acted like he was sort of interested in the stuff I was telling him. And so all I needed was that little tiny, tiny door cracked open. And then I just kicked the whole thing wide open because I told him that I had run B1 at our convention for the last 8 years. And it was, and I'd probably run the adventure over 100 times. He said, and he acted like he was very interested and said, well, how do you keep it interesting that much? Well, because I have different versions of it. And then he started asking me questions, and then I was running with the ball towards the goal at that point. I was like, oh, yeah. Mike Carr wants to hear all about my game. Of course, you know, I realized he probably was just being very nice. And
then the restraining order arrived.
I did help. And after a while, I woke up, looked around, so there was other people there waiting for their stuff to be signed, and I kind of bowed out gracefully. But that was really nice. He was a very, very nice guy. I would love to have him at our con. He just doesn't make it down to Texas. But that was my really big fanboy moment of the convention, was meeting Mike Carr.
Oh, I'm jealous.
That's really cool. You see all these people like every single year, and you can fanboy out. That's awesome. I gotta admit, I would lose it after a while. Like, yeah, it's okay. It's just, you know, Elvis.
And, you know, what's different for some of the guys? I mean, like, Tim Cass has been to all our cons, so, like, it's like, hey, Tim, what's up? Hey, Mike. You know, okay, whatever. I've already done my Tim Cass fanboying, you know, 10 years ago. So,
yeah.
So it's nice to have a new guy in there that I had never met before that I was able to kind of feel that, whoa, this guy wrote this. This is just so awesome meeting him.
Well, I don't know if it was a fanboy moment, but I finally got a chance to just stand around and talk to John Peterson about historical gaming issues of the 70s and prior. So that was cool because I've either only talked to him on podcasts, or if I've seen him at a con, it's usually us running past going, hey, maybe we'll talk to you later. And we never do. So that was cool.
He's a great guy to talk to. And I actually feel bad I didn't get to talk to him because it seemed like every time I saw John during the con, he was just getting up to leave somewhere. But he's really an incredibly interesting guy to talk to about anything gaming.
But yeah, that was a great con. If we go next time, we'll get a room closer to the actual con rather than on the far side of the hotel down the hill.
It is set up really oddly in that it's wise, not up and down. There's only, what, 3 stories, I think? So but it's like very long. And where y'all were was the outer side of Kathmandu somewhere.
Yeah. For those not aware, the GaryCon has been held past couple of years at the Grand Hotel in Lake Geneva. Is that what it's called?
Lake Geneva Grand. I think that's it.
Hmm. Yeah. Anyway, it used to be the Playboy Mansion for the area back in the 70s, but it got sold and reskinned. So this is the place where Gen Con in the late 70s was held. What was it, 78?
Yeah, there was one. Was it one or two shows? I know at least one. I don't know.
At least one, yeah. And I kept meaning to grab Frank Mincer and see about, hey, you got any good stories about this place? Can you, like, give us a tour or something? Oh, well. But yeah, that's been our big gaming thing, other than our DM has decided to move from 2nd edition to 5th edition. So we're being dragged along.
No, not 5th edition.
No.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, our first session of the new campaign is going to take place tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, we played the introductory, the pre-gens that came with the box set.
Starter.
The little starter kit that came out for 5e. Our DM Chase ran us through that. So that was a couple of years back. I think it was his bachelor party, actually.
Yeah.
Chase ran a game for people at his bachelor party. And
that actually sounds like a pretty fun bachelor party, which means I'm a nerd, probably. So. Yeah.
Oh, well, that was my bachelor party. And Liz was at my bachelor party.
Okay, that's really rough.
I was gaming at at Mike's bachelor party with him, too. So, yeah.
Well, your maid of honor didn't have a bachelorette thing going on, so you.
Yeah, I didn't get a bachelorette party, so I crashed his party so I could do something.
Before your life was over.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get that's a little too far back. So let's head into emails.
Now call. Listen up. When I call your name, you will sound off.
Email. Rumor has it we have. And in the long-standing tradition of this brand new podcast, Liz will read them.
All right. We've only been around for about, I guess now, 3.5 episodes, but we do have quite a few emails to go through. We'll start it off with DM Kojo. He writes, first off, it is great to hear you back on the podcast airwaves. It was great seeing Mike, Liz, and Jim at GaryCon, and I appreciate Mike signing my Victorious book. He also gives us some of his suggestions for things that he'd like to hear us cover in future shows. Going from counting down from 5 to his number 1, Kojo would like to hear about the FOSSA Star Trek game, Top Secret, the original, not the SI version.
Oh, yeah.
TSR's Marvel Superheroes.
It's a good one, too.
Call of Cthulhu.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, Star Frontiers.
Oh, yeah, that was a game, too.
Yeah.
The best supplement for Traveler I've ever seen. Because of all the maps and counters and stuff.
Hey, they let you play a space monkey. That's cool.
And a blob.
I want to play an amoeba.
Yeah. Traveler doesn't let you play an amoeba. So there. Anyway, well, those sound like all cool games. We ought to really give those a try. I must admit, I would probably be best off with Marvel Superheroes and Call of Cthulhu, because those are the ones I played the most. But I have some experience with all of them, so.
Well, you've played Star Trek, too, haven't you?
Well, yeah.
There?
But I haven't played it as much as I have the others.
No.
And generally, I only got to run it. I never got to actually play it.
Yeah, that must have means you like it the most.
No, nobody else would buy a copy or borrow mine to run it. Okay, back to emails.
All right, our next email is from DM Dan, and DM Dan writes, greetings, halfers.
Woo-hoo.
I was very excited to see that Save for Half has been rebooted. Listening to you is like wearing a comfortable pair of shoes. It always feels good to take a walk in them.
And occasionally smells.
Yes.
You're the Chuck Taylors of gaming.
Yep.
Yeah. At least we're not the Doc Martens. Anyway, he goes on to say, even though I'm not really a Doctor Who fan, I enjoyed episode 1 because you guys really do put out the best produced podcast out there. You keep on being entertaining with good production quality, interesting podcast segments, and fun topics. I will miss the departure of DM Jim, but I look forward to DM Corbett as the new host. DM Dan.
Oh, that's no pressure on
me. Thanks, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
don't
even
worry.
Though you're not a Doctor Who fan, Dan, we still love you, and we hope you'll keep listening.
DM Jim's not completely gone.
Nope. In fact, next episode, you might have a little commentary from him. We shall see.
Secret stuff.
Secret stuff. Keep listening to find out. Next one, Liz.
Our next email is from Klangador Moonthorpe.
Klangador!
Some of you might know him from the forums. So, Klangador writes, to all you savers, congratulations on the new show and being, quote, back on the air, end quote. I am saddened by the loss of the ability to call you Sodders now. May I propose you use the moniker of Savers instead?
Well, it sounds better than halfies, that's for sure.
Peppers.
And I am not sad about people not being able to call us Sodders anymore. I've just got to put that out there right now.
DM Liz saves.
Klangador goes on to say, I want to put the original Top Secret and Gamma World RPGs in the hat for you to do shows on.
No, we'll never cover Gamma World. Oh,
again, Again, welcome back, Cotter, Clangador Moonthorpe. So that's two votes for top secret right there.
Yeah, I think one's going to be coming up soon.
Oh, yeah.
Get off your calculators.
Oh.
Yep. You had to have a calculator next to you when you did original top secret because those numbers added up quick.
Yeah.
And then you used a machine gun and nobody cared anymore. Seriously, machine guns were kind of the grappling and pummeling rules for Traveler. Yeah, it's just that system. Can I just stab him? Or
I want to shoot him. Oh, no.
I love that game. I really did. But the machine gun just kind of, wow.
Yeah, I'm telling you. To segue back into GaryCon briefly, we played in a game of the new Top Secret New World Order game, and James Carpio was running that particular session. We got all kinds of really cool handouts that we got to keep after the game, and they were so awesome looking that...
I have those handouts.
Yeah, I was about to say, they were so awesome looking and so realistic looking at a glance that I actually asked Bad Mike if he could please take our badges and dossiers and stuff and take them home with him because he was driving back and we were going to be flying. And I just had this awful thought that we were going to have a replay of the original Top Secret game and have
the
airport
FBI
customs
showed up.
Going through our bags, you know, the TSA, and going, oh my God, they're spies. And it was like, no, it's a game. But yeah, the quality of the stuff was just so really amazing. And I actually felt a bit concerned for myself if I tried to take them back in our carry-on luggage. So, yeah, we got Bad Mike to drive them back home with him.
Really nice. I think I might have lost them along the way. Sorry, guys. They were really nice looking. So
great.
Bad guys.
DM Liz, agent of Icon.
Emails. Okay, back to emails. Our next email is from Bob Brinkman. And those of you who listen to Sanctum Sacorum and other kind of cool podcasts may be slightly aware of him. Anyway.
And we read half of his email during the Doctor Who episode.
That here is the other half.
No. We read it during the Cyborg Command. See, it's so confusing how we record these right now.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was Cyborg Commando. You're right.
Yeah. All of our time traveling is confusing.
Yeah, all these parallel realities, I tell you.
Anyway, at some time in the past or future, we may have read the first half of his email already, and now we are reading the other half. And Bob says, overall, a lot of really cool stuff listed in the games you want to cover. I'm hoping for Mach, the First Colony, Living Steel, a.k.a. Phoenix Command in Space, Pendragon, The Morrow Project, and Sandman. And he says, okay, I've played it, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, try to find a copy, first of all. Sandman's a tough one to find.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I've played Morrow Project and Living Steel in that list, but I haven't played the others, I'm afraid. Sound interesting,
I've played none of them.
Bob, we'll do our best to try to scare some up and do some reviews. I think Morrow Project would be fun because that'd be a perfect... We could deal with that as an evolution because when it started out, it was really kind of a miniatures game and only eventually evolved with RPG-ness.
It was a big game in Texas in the 80s. I remember that was probably one of the bigger post-apocalyptic games that I remember. And I talked to people around the country. I don't know a lot of people that played it except in Texas. For some reason, it was popular here.
I originally bought FGU's Aftermath when I was in North Mississippi and played it a while. And then when I moved to Texas, I was trying to get people to play Aftermath. And everybody's like, no, Morrow Project. It's cooler.
All right. Our next email is from Gramps Toolshed. And Gramps writes, definitely do the Dresden Files game. Right now, I am reading Deadbeat and working my way through the series.
Me too.
And he goes on to say, I was tragically underwhelmed with the Dresden TV show. We feel your pain.
Yeah.
that it wasn't great.
Hockey stick, really?
I mean, it wasn't bad. If you'd never read any of the books and all you watched was the TV show, it probably would have been okay, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you had absolutely no idea what anything's supposed to be, you'd like it because it's totally wrong.
So I'm 9 books in. I should stay away from the TV show.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I
don't know. I think you should watch the TV show. It's nothing like watching the bad version of something to remember, oh, yeah, that's why it was good.
Well, if you missed it, yeah.
Anyway, he also says that he is hoping for Boot Hill and Ooh. Twilight 2000. And then he says, it's glad to see you guys making podcasts again. It was a cold 2 months thinking that it was gone forever.
I don't really have much experience with Twilight 2000. I got tons with Boot Hill, though. And I know my old childhood friend Mike Methvin was mentioning we ought to do that, too. So I think Top Secret and Boot Hill are in the imminent future. Okay, well, any more emails?
Yes. We've got quite a few, but we're almost done. Our next one is DM Herb, and he writes, I'm listening to Save for Half number 2, and I have a story you might find funny about why I first got Gamma World. I wanted to buy D&D Basic with 1977 Christmas money, but it sold out in my stores. They did, however, have standalone copies of the Holmes book, which I went to buy. However, they had no dice. He said, my father was told that Gamma World was the same thing, except it was science fiction, and it had dice. So I spent my Christmas money on the Gamma World boxed set and the Holmes book. Gamma World I read first, being a sci-fi fan, and only afterwards the Holmes book. I ran Holmes first, though, and played a lot more D&D than GW. I can't wait for another year of shows, perhaps meeting the D'Amigos in 2018 when I plan on hitting all 3 big OSR cons.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wait a minute. All 3? What's the third one?
Game
probably,
Hole. I'm probably,
probably
sure
Game Hole, yeah.
About.
Oh,
yeah,
Game Hole, okay.
We're number 1 JRPG con, and then Gary Con's like a way distant second, and then Game Hole's down there. Maybe like way distant.
way.
Alex is that? I'm going to catch it. Boy. Yeah.
First, but North Texas.
North Texas is number 1.
Yeah. Number 1 of that. Yeah.
It is the shining diamond in the setting of the OSR.
You know,
to the pyramid, yes.
As far as his experience with Gamma World, I actually heard that from a lot of people. There are very few people I've met who just got into Gamma World and, you know, kind of play D&D, but mostly Gamma World. It's always been the other way around.
Yeah. I wound up getting Gamma World simply because my parents bought me all of the TSR stuff that they could find, you know, for my birthday and Christmas gifts.
Gosh.
So I got Gamma World as a gift.
And Top Secret.
Ironically, though, I never did get the Boot Hill boxed set. But yeah, I got Gamma World, I got Top Secret, I got Star Frontiers, pretty much all of the TSR box games. I even got the Rocky and Bullwinkle box game. But for whatever reason, Boot Hill never found its way as a birthday or Christmas gift to me.
But it was awesome, that old cover with the looking at the back of the cowboy wearing 70s bell bottoms. That was awesome.
Yeah. You have awesome parents for buying that for you.
Yeah. I've got a copy of Boot Hill, so she has access to one.
I have access to Boot Hill, but it was not one of the games that I got when I was a kid growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure why. I never said I don't want Boot Hill. It was,
I think that was probably one of the hardest to find of all the box sets back then, because I seem to remember even back in the day having to look for that a little bit before I found it. I wonder if I had a lower print run than the other games you mentioned.
Certainly
John
fewer
Peterson
editions. Yeah, if only John Peterson were here. That'd be cool if we could have him pop in an episode like that. You know?
Summon John Peterson. That needs to be a magic spell.
Quick, we need a third level John Peterson.
It's a footnote. It's a citation. It's John Peterson.
Dun, 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 dun.
That'd be awesome.
Okay. Well, thank you, DM Herb. And yeah.
Hopefully we'll see you at least one of those cons in 2018.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Our last email for the show is from JV West.
Woo!
JV West.
And JV writes, hello, halfsies.
I can live with halfsies.
Yeah, yeah.
I still like Savers, though.
Savers is good.
I want to be halflings.
Of course you do.
I guess we could be fouries.
Fouries sounds like some obscure military term.
It really does.
You're not 4F, but you're 4E.
4E.
Okay. Hello, halfsies. I finished listening to your Gamma World coverage. Always wanted to play this game, right up my alley of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. In high school, my gaming friend Eric and I each pitched in a $5 bill and change and bought it. Our intention was to have dual custody and thus take turns running games.
That never
works.
We
had such... Yeah, he says, we had such big plans, but never ran it.
And
he never shared it. In fact, that bastard owes me $5 and change.
Counted with interest, too, over the last 30
years.
Oh, yeah.
That's at least $15, $16.
You can't get anything nowadays for $5.
That's right.
Except at Taco Bell.
Keep it halfway there. J.B. West.
Halfway. Oh,
that's
yeah.
A good tag like that.
Well, if you would like to write in and tell us what you think of our shows, you
send
can write
us $5.
In.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
To saferhalfpodcast@gmail.com. And for now, we will take a break. And when we get back, Mike Bottolato is going to tell us about a con called North Texas RPG Con.
Mm. I wonder what that is.
That could be anything.
Reach the Pinecone Motel to have breakfast with Brooke.
But I'll be at the chateau with Adam.
A friendly game of all my children turns not so friendly when someone's out to
ruin Phoebe's hairdo,
read Angie's diary.
All my children turns a proper party into a Pine Valley affair.
Testify against Tad.
Frame Jesse.
All my children, a game.
To be good, you've got to be bad.
Are with Mike Bottolato of North Texas RPG Con, which is apparently a convention held in Texas.
Is it?
North Texas.
Who knew?
Yeah. North Texas. Yes, none of you southern, eastern, or western Texans. Only North Texas.
Well, now, there is a purpose to that, too, because when we decided to have a con, one of the reasons was there wasn't any old school conventions in North Texas, or actually in the southern part of the USA, period. So.
Period, yeah. Quite true.
Yeah,
quite true.
They're very northern, aren't they?
Yes, they're very Wisconsin-y, Midwestern-y oriented, which is one of the reasons we decided to do it. We decided that people in DFW had as much right to meet Frank Mentzer as people in Madison, Wisconsin. So,
yeah.
Indeed.
Sorry, can I ask a question?
No. Sure.
You created it, right? You and Doug created the convention. What was your inspiration to do that? Just like, I like conventions. I don't want to go to them anymore. I just want them to come to me.
What year was the first one, by
great,
the way?
Great leading question, Corbett. Succeed at this business. Well, actually, 2007 and 2008, I went to Gen Con for the first time. While it was really fun and we had a great time, I remember thinking the best times I had was when I met with just small groups of people that I'd met online and we gamed off the grid. And so when I came back, I had talked to Doug, who was a friend of mine. We'd met online through the ACAM, which is an online collector's forum. And I told him how much fun I had. Well, that summer, he had a few local ACAM members over, and we had like a party in his backyard. We thought, this is really fun. I mean, because we all have something in common. It's, you know, old school games, and this is actually somebody we can talk to. And one of the things I had told Doug was that it's really funny. You go to these conventions, and there's hardly any old school games being played, because at the time, there wasn't. Mm-hmm. The OSR, I guess it really started, about 2005, 2006? We had, and I noticed there was not a lot of old school games at most conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went ahead and thought, wouldn't it be fun if we could get a bunch of people here from the ACAM or just people we know online and get them to come to a convention here? How hard can that be to do? You know, And actually, if you're going to do it on the scale we did it on, it wasn't that hard. We put out a couple ads, and I thought, let's get some local guests, because I don't want to have to pay anybody to fly in. There is actually a lot of older gaming celebrities that live in the area. And so we had talked to Dennis Sister, who lived in Austin, and Paul Jacques at the time, who lived in North Texas. And I think Jason Braun was going to be our artist special guest. He lived in San Antonio. And at some point, Doug just said, you know what, if we're going to do this, let's just make it a real convention. And so he called up Tim Cass, Frank Mentzer, and Rob Koontz, and said, hey, would y'all like to come to Texas? And they're like, sure, you pay our hotel room and our plane flight, and we're there. And so we kind of had our own little convention at that point. And we thought early on, we said, well, how can we make this different or interesting? Because the type of person that we had coming to the con was pretty much an old school collector type. And we decided to make, at that point, to make it RPG centric. A lot of the conventions at the time, and actually to this day, they have RPGs, but they also have become very card game oriented, especially at the time. Mm-hmm. Very card game oriented. Mm-hmm. You go to a convention, there'd be one or two D&D games, and then there'd be a room with 80 tables, and everybody's playing Magic cards on there. So we pretty much no card games, no tabletop gaming, just RPGs. And to further limit our ability to make money, we RPGs that have rule systems from 2000 or older. Anyway, so with very little advertisement, the first year we had about 55 people came in, and we rented a room at the La Quinta Inn. It was their convention room. And we had three or four tables all squashed together, and everybody had a great time. It was really incredible. And the thing everybody kept asking us is, you're going to do this again, right? Because this is just really, really great to come to a convention, have these guys here, and to play these old school games. And so we said, oh, I guess so. And so we just went and every year we got a little bigger. We've gained attendance every year. This year we're going to have about 450 people. And we've moved to a bigger hotel this year because the place we had the convention the last few years, the Marriott, had become just a little too small for what we had planned. We at some point, we wanted to move to 400 or 500 people. One thing I'd like to add is we had never had a plan to be a big con. The same year we started, Gary Con also started. And as we know from going to Gary Con, it's grown to quite an incredible convention at this point. I think this year their attendance was 1,800. Mm. And I think they're just going to grow from there. They put on a really good show. But we didn't want to be Gary Con. We just wanted to be a small little convention where you had a lot of special guests. You got to walk around and meet everybody. It wasn't very crowded, and it was just kind of, you know, you just kind of relax. Just get there and you get to sit around and meet people like Errol Otis and Frank Mentzer and Steve Marsh and just kind of sit back and have a good time. And so we also cap
membership, right?
Yeah, we do cap membership. I was going to add, we're also too cheap to pay staff. So we figured if we keep it at 500 or under, that we won't have to hire any staff. We have a lot of people help us out, a lot of family members, a lot of friends. And we've actually talked to people about expanding the con, and almost universally, the talk has been, don't do it. Stay exactly how you are. We love you just the way you are. We like to go there. 400 or 500 people is just the perfect amount of people for what we want to do at your con.
I agree.
When Liz and I were at Gary Con, we had a great time. It was awesome to see so many old school enthusiasts, especially younger ones around. But we agreed that it really just kind of brought home how much more cozy and relaxing North Texas is in comparison, because it caps the number of people.
Well, the problem with both is, I mean, that's not really a problem, is that people put on cons want to make money. And you definitely want to at least break even, and if not make. That's, oddly enough, that's never been a consideration of ours. Doug said he just wants to put on a show. He doesn't mind losing a little money every year if it's the kind of thing we want to do. And so we're not bound by the strictures a lot of other conventions are, which makes sense. I mean, honestly, a lot of people can't do what we're doing. You can't just say, hey, we're going to have a con for 10 years and lose money every year. I mean, it's just that we've been able to keep it where we pretty much break even or maybe lose a little money every year. Most people just can't do that. And so they want to get bigger. They want to have 2,000-3,000 people. We're just like, nope, we'll just stay at 450. And actually this year we raised it from 450. I think last year we had close to 350. We decided we wanted to get a little bigger, which is why we moved to the new location this year, the Westin. But that's probably about as big as we're going to keep it. We're going to ever have it. Maybe 500 at some
point. Well, good.
No, it still feels like a big big, friendly get-together. It doesn't feel like a convention. I mean, it does feel like a convention. That sounds bad.
Well, we do things a lot different. If you ever noticed, if you read our guest list, is there's not a lot of conventions where basically 10% of their attendance is their special guests.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, but any one year we'll have 20 to 30 special guests and only, 300 to 400 people attending. So it's not a lot of people can do that either. But that was one of the things Doug wanted to do at the very beginning. His vision was that he wanted to have a convention where there was all the special guests were just sitting around and there wasn't any kind of VIP or you have to buy a special ticket to get to see this guy. You could just be sitting there and at a game and you look to your right and there's Errol Otis throwing the dice with you and, and the guy running, to your left, there's Steve Winter. And you're just like, oh my gosh, because that's just not something you would see in a bigger convention. Most of those guys have a lot of, they don't have a lot of time to be able to just actually sit and play games. And we encourage it. Them. If y'all want to play, you only have to run two games. If you want to play games the rest of the time, it's fine. If you just want to sit around, we only ask you that you be extremely accessible to all the attendees.
Mm.
Seriously, though, you guys do always do a special charity game.
Oh, yeah.
And you raffle off seats to that, and the money goes to, I'm pretty sure it's a different charity every year, right? You have an opportunity to sit and play with a whole bunch TSR luminaries.
Well, actually, that changes here. We have a new charity called Aerie, A-E-R-I-E, and it's for gamers. And as some people know and some people might not know, my partner Doug was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer at the end of last year, and he's been going through chemotherapy, and it looks like he's actually doing very well now. But for a few months, it was really touch and go, and he ran up a lot of doctor bills, and he had some financial issues that we were able to handle through a GoFundMe. But the man who ran the GoFundMe, Chad, did such a great job, and Doug was so impressed at the way the gaming community came together that he and Chad have formed their own charity now, so that from now on the charity game will be putting money towards this area, and it's for gamers who have issues, medical issues or financial problems.
Wow.
Well, that's cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I thought that they did a really good job with that. Doug was able to pay off his doctor bills, and we were able to have the con because it wasn't ever, we had prepaid the con, it wasn't ever in jeopardy, but we were looking at maybe not having as many special guests and having to cut down some of the special functions, but through the generosity of other gamers, we were able to have the same kind of convention this year that we have every other year.
Oh, that is cool. Although I notice when you were talking about the various special guests, there's one you forgot got to mention.
Oh boy.
Satan. Who shows up every Saturday night, isn't that correct?
Well, let me do a little background. First of all, special guest a little bit. This year, come to the con, I'm going to run down the list of who we have. And we try to, one of the things we do is, because of where we're located in the southern United States, we do get some guests that don't get to the northern conventions because they're local. And we also try to bring in people that people...
Like Satan.
Yeah, like Satan.
It's hard to book Satan, I'll have you know.
That's very easy to get. Bottle of Maker's Mark gets him there. But this year we have Bob Bledsoe Jr., Chris Clark, Darlene, Jeff D., Jeff Easley, Matt Finch, Alan Hammock, Bruce Hurd, Kevin Hendricks and his wife Mary, Jack Herman, Tim Kask, Doug Kovacs, I'm running out of breath here, David Lefiesel, Steve Marsh, Frank Menser, Mark Nelson, Errol Otis, Steve Perrin, Stephen Pokorny, Merle Rasmussen, Dennis Astaire.
deep breath.
Push it out.
We have a lot of guests for a very small convention. And some of them are only particular to our convention. Steve Marsh and Dennis Astaire, the man who invented Bunnies and Burrows and the Druid class, comes to our convention only. But you're speaking of Satan. Yes, Satan does attend. He runs a midnight auction, which started about 3 years ago and oddly enough has become pretty much our most popular thing at the convention, which blows. That people love it so much, because the first year we had it, we had maybe a couple dozen people in the room. And then last year, the room was absolutely packed. We actually went over the seating capacity for the room. Fire marshal should have shut us down. And luckily this year, we actually have an auditorium with a seating of over 100. So we should be able to get everybody in. But yes, Satan comes in, and we have a live auction during the day on Saturday that's run by Frank Menser. And we auction off some really rare stuff. I mean, y'all have been to every convention, Mike and Liz, and you've seen some of the stuff we've auctioned, browses and just one-of-a-kind items that have gotten several $1,000s, you know, shrink-wrapped box sets, just all kinds of stuff. And Satan doesn't deal with that. Satan deals with the debris of gaming.
Well, it originally started as kind of a parody of the whole satanic panic of the 80s, right?
Well, I dug around the warehouse and found a lot of stuff that we just had that was sitting on our shelves for years that we just couldn't get rid of. And I thought, we need to get rid of this somehow. And then for
like,
some
hey, I know with some suckers.
The Mazes and Monsters book and then the Mazes and Monsters DVD, and a little light went off over my head. I said, oh, we'll have a satanic panic auction and auction everything with the word Satan or devil or demon, which, by the way, there's quite a bit of that in the game that was worried about its image in the 80s. For a game that was worried about its image in the 80s, there is a lot of material with devils and Satan on it. And so that just, it just kind of grew out of that. So it expanded from there to just any kind of oddball, crazy game. And then
that's
this
underwear.
It's totally out of control at this point. Yes, there's, you know, underwear and sex games and, you know, whatever, costumes. And it's a whole production. It's become an entire production.
Yeah. Although, speaking of Mazes and Monsters, we are a couple of the proud owners of one of the DVDs of Mazes and Monsters from last year's Midnight Auction.
I have to purchase a copy every year to auction at the convention because now everybody expects there to be a satanic panic part of the auction. So I'm forced to go online to eBay and buy a Mazes and Monsters DVD every year, just so we can have that in the convention.
A couple of months ago, a friend of mine emailed me saying that he had noticed that Mazes and Monsters was on Netflix, but he tried to watch it but couldn't get past the first 15 minutes and wanted to know if we wanted to watch it with him. We're like, oh, sure, yeah, come on over. He's like, oh, do you have a Netflix account? And I'm like, dude, I got the DVD!
Special features. So,
that's right. We broke that open and watched it. And
alas, no special features, though, darn it. No interviews.
I tell you, I love the kids' miniatures. I mean, those giant little statuettes they were using, they were so cool.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So, you know, people may think of Tom Hanks as the Academy Award-winning guy of some great movies, but I'll always remember him as the crazy DM of
R2 the Cleric.
Yeah, I'll always see him, you know. Wilson on a raft, but, you know, running through caves, going insane.
Yeah.
Working out those Oscar chops, man.
That bosom butt, man. He did it.
Yeah, showbiz is a hard job.
It is.
Anyway, as mentioned earlier, we do have a attendance cutoff of this year 450. However, we have about 90 seats available, so we will be able to do walk-ups, and for the next couple of weeks, we'll be able to do reservations, actually. But after May 1st, the price goes up from $65 to $75. So if you were going to go, get it for May 1st best. If not, the walk-up will be $75. But we still have many seats available, so there'll be plenty of walk-ups, and there's plenty of empty spaces and games available. So if you're curious about it, come on out. We have day passes also, which run $35 to $40. And if you're just curious about the con and you don't know whether or not you'd like to spend money on it, we have something on Wednesday night called the pre-con get in on. And what that is, it's just Wednesday night, everybody just kind of hangs out. We have some scheduled games, a lot of pickup games. There's no cost. Anybody can show up. You can play any type of game you want. There's special guests there. You can meet them. Just kind of a little pre-con, little fun thing. So we've had quite a few people over the years that have come to the pre-con, get it on Wednesday night, and right then and there decide to buy full weekend passes.
That's totally worth it. Well, actually, would you have any special discounts for people with spectacular mustaches or anything? Or
we already have quite a few.
Yeah, Liz wanted to know about that, too.
Yeah.
And a monocle.
probably not the kind of convention you want to cosplay at. It's our target audience seems to be the 30 to 50-year-old overweight white male. So
anyone complaining about Liz and her corset.
Well, of course. Well, no, that's the kind of cosplay we'd love to see more of.
It would be preposterous to cosplay.
I was going to say, we do dress up for the Victorious game sessions, but yeah, I don't tend to to run about in costume for the entire weekend. Although, because I am signed up for Dennis Astaire's Bunnies and Burrows game this year, I'm going to be digging out those bunny ears that were passed around the last time he ran the game. So I'll be wearing the bunny ears for Bunnies and Burrows.
Which, by the way, this has to be the only convention in the U.S. that has Bunnies and Burrows. Am I right? I mean, and it's
definitely
definitely the only one where the guy actually wrote the dang game is there. I mean, that's got to be something else. And I think his game is filled up, if I remember correctly. So that would be one you probably wouldn't be able to get into. But that's the kind of thing we run here.
Yeah, I'm looking to play this year because Bunnies and Burrows was one of those games back in the late 70s I always saw on Dragon and thought, that looks crazy. I'd love to play that. But nobody I ever knew had it or played it.
Well, by the way, and you brought up Victorious. That's a good point. Just because we're an old school game convention, we don't just have old school games. We also have, I don't know what you would call it, I guess OSR type, old school feel type games. And Victorious is one of those games that's got the old school feel to it that we allow in. We also allow in a lot of the retro clones like Swords and Wizardry. And we do have D&D 5th Edition there. We'll pretty much run anything role playing that somebody wants to play as long as they can fill up a table playing it. So there's no really games that are off limits. I think the only thing we probably haven't ever had at the con was D&D 4th Edition. I don't think there's ever been a 4th Edition game.
Oh, now I want to totally run a 4th Edition game.
Hey, it's old school now. It's out of print, man.
I
don't want to play some old stuff. We have new stuff also. We try to have an old school theme, but, you know, I think the Villains and Vigilantes game that Jeff D and Jack Herman run is the new version. It's not the original. And we have that. Quite a few people run newer versions. I think the Paranoia game that's run is run with one of the newer rule sets.
Of course, a lot of these, you know, it's just a new edition of the old rule set, still recognizably the same game, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not like D&D did with...
Call of Cthulhu.
Everything you know is wrong.
Well, yeah, the Call of Cthulhu game, you're going to die no matter if it's 1st edition or 7th edition.
Yeah.
There are some things you can always count on.
Yeah, you're going to go insane and you're going to get killed by an outer god. So, yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of games, just to throw this out there, what games are Mike and Liz playing in this year so we can hear what kind of different games we have in our con?
Well, I think I'm playing in a Victorious game.
Oh, okay.
One, maybe.
Well, you're playing in one or running one?
Well, that's playing too. I'm both. Friday
all these
afternoon.
Things and more.
Friday afternoon, I'm running a Victorious game. I think there's a couple of seats left in it. It's based loosely on War of the Worlds, but it's a slightly different world that the Martians may be invading. So we're signed up for Bunnies and Burrows. There's a game Saturday at noon that we're playing called Discos and Dragons.
Oh, I was wanting to get into that. Oh, man.
The guy is running Holmes Basic. Everything he's running with it is only stuff that was available in the late 70s. So he's got
nice.
The Swan Hill Outdoor Survival for the wilderness encounters and mapping and all that stuff. It is like, ooh, that sounds cool. I got to get in that.
And Saturday night, Mike and I are going to be in a Tejal Manor session. It is not run by Bob Bledsaw, but it is Tejal Manor, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And on Thursday evening, I am going to be in Bad Mike's B1 game.
Once again, I am not.
you're invited, Mike. Want. You choose to drink yourself silly at the bar every Thursday night instead of playing a B1 game.
Yeah.
Well, I run a B1 game every year. I run In Search of the Unknown because one of the first things somebody told me was that that came to one of our conventions is, hey, y'all don't run any old games like White Plume Mountain or this or that. You should run one of those because I never got to play in those. And that had never even crossed my mind. I'm like, somebody didn't play in like the classic D&D modules? And I started asking around, and yes, there's a whole generation that never played Temple of Elemental Evil or Tomb of Horrors, a lot of the games that, you know, we just, you know, everybody, there was a touchstone for our generation.
Against the Giants, G1, yeah.
And so I said, well, I'm going to start running B1, Search the Unknown, for people who have never played in it before, because it's the game, the adventure I've most run over the years, because I think it's a really great introductory adventure. And I bad mic it up. I have all my little idiosyncrasies and special rules. As Liz can tell you, I have just really, I have something called the bad crap chart that I roll on.
As opposed to the good crap.
if you do things that annoy the DM, then he rolls to see terrible things that happen to you.
But we've done it every year, and it fills up and every year. And I think out of 9 years, Liz, you've probably played in five of them, five or six times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I try to get in every year, and I don't always succeed, because once the registration opens, seats in your game go in under a minute. Yeah. It's insane.
It's like Thunderdome for that.
I'm back anyway.
Yeah.
I think for 8 years, it was the first game filled up. I always give Frank Mansour a hard time over that, because his is usually the second it fills up. And so I'm like, come on, Frank, you know, pay attention over here. You know,
that's okay. Liz actually won't be there. She's going to scalp your ticket out.
Bad idea. No, but, yeah, it fills up really quickly, and which always surprised me. But we have a good time, don't we, Liz?
It's a good time.
It's funny that you want to play the same game year after year. It's never the same, is it, Liz?
No, the group will pick different scenarios, and even if we do pick the same one that I've been in before, it never turns out the same. And so,
Well, B1 is a module set up specifically to be changed.
And that's what one of the things I do is I demonstrate the versatility of it. I have five totally different versions with different monsters, different themes, different treasures, and I let the players choose the beginning of the session which one they want. And sometimes they choose, I think I have one that's really hard that I always say, well, this is really hard. Don't choose this one unless you really want to do it. And I think it's been chosen once. For the most part, yes, even if you have the same session year after year, depending on your players and depending on what direction they want to go, because it's impossible to cover the entire – it's not as big as Tejal Manor, but it's big enough to where you don't necessarily cover the same ground every year. You can get bogged down in the Room of Pools or the Mushroom Room or in some of the underground caverns, so we have a good time, and every year it turns out a little differently. And I think I have laughed so hard in some of those games. Everybody at the table is basically like falling on the ground, rolling around. some of the mishaps and just crazy stuff that's happened to people in B1. and I had one of my best things ever. There's a DM happened 2 years ago. My game filled up as usual, and I get an email from a gentleman known as Errol Otis, who asked, Mike, I've heard of your B1 game. Is there any way I could prevail upon you to get a seat in there? Because I noticed it's already filled up. So I sent him an email back and said, hell no, dude, who do you think you are?
Yeah, that was one of the years I couldn't get in. It's like, you're letting Errol Otis in! It's like, I don't blame you, I would too.
Jim Wampler had both been the year before, and they were upset they got to miss that year. So I got to DM Errol Otis through B1, and we had a ball as usual. And he was a funny. I mean, he's a great guy anyway, but he doesn't look like his drawings would suggest a guy would look like if he was making those comments. But he just has a great sense of humor, just a great guy. We had a great time. But that was one of my all-time moments I'll remember. And one of the funniest parts was when we all sat down at the table, I have a stack of BX rule books that I hand out if anybody wants to read the rules. And they have the Errol Otis picture on the front. And before the game, I handed the stack to Errol. I said, oh, Errol, could you go ahead and sign these for me? He says, we're here. That way we can have them every year. And two or three people kind of swiveled their heads around as if to say, what? Who is the Errol Otis was there? And they absolutely flipped their wig where they're like, whoa, that's Errol Otis. I'm gaming with Errol Otis, dude. So
one of my big complaints, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening are like, what? Everything's locked out. Why would I go to this convention? Last year I went, and there was brand new games up on the board that were only there for people who just showed up. They had Frank Mensur, Jim Ward. But, I mean, I showed up and it was like, holy heck, I can still get into these games. So I got in, and it was great. And,
well, I think last year was the year we weren't sure Jim Ward was going to show up until the last minute. Mm-hmm. And so all his games were added like the day before. So, yes, if you signed up early, you actually had no chance at a Jim Ward game.
Right.
But you'd have a chance of getting in these potential games just by being a walk-up. So that's
pretty cool. There's plenty of games. And we have open gaming, too. I mean, that's then this year with the large, we're moving to the Westin Hotel in Irving from the Marriott. And it's probably, you're all going to be amazed when you see it. It's at least three times bigger space.
Yeah. It's the same location as FinCon, which we went to last year.
And it's just a bit bigger. There's a lot of room for open gaming, and there'll be a lot of, like you said, games that just pop up. But there's always tons of walk-up games.
And there's always people who just, you know, they sign up for your game, but when the time comes, they never show up at the table. And so there is always a chance. If there's a game that was full when you looked at it on the schedule, you know, but you really want to try and get in there, swing by. Because there might be an open seat because no one should, somebody didn't show up.
Errol Otis runs a game on Saturdays when he comes to our con. It's an all day game. It starts in the morning, ends in the evening, and his game fills up really quickly because he runs a really, really interesting campaign based in his own world. The last couple times he's run it, there's been an opening. Somebody didn't show up for the game. And so that's a highly coveted spot that just opens up at the last minute. So as Liz said, definitely check these games out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, where would someone go on the internets to find out about North Texas?
Why would I know? Oh, yeah, I do know that. Well, our official website is ntrpgcon.com. Don't be put off by how old-fashioned it looks. That's because my partner, Doug, if it works, it works. And he doesn't feel like changing it. But it does look very old-fashioned.
No, it's ambient. It's ambient.
Yeah. Vintage.
Go there. You'll find most of the information you need. There's also a Facebook page, the North Texas RPG Con page. And I would say most of the news about NTRPG Con gets disseminated on the Facebook page. We're really into social media here. Well, at least I am. Doug doesn't have a Facebook page. Doug doesn't Facebook. But so I would either go to the website or to the Facebook page. If you're in the DFW area, our new hotel is going to be the Westin DFW Airport Hotel. It's right north of the airport off John Carpenter Freeway. And if you're going to come, you decide you're going to come, even at the last minute, ask for the special rate for con attendees. And you get a room there for $108 a night, which is really competitive for those rooms.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say those rooms usually run about $150, $160. The best ways to get info are either the website or the Facebook page. Oh, okay. I might as well tell you the date just in case you might want to come. that might help a little bit. Our convention is always starts the first Thursday in June. So any year you're thinking, it's usually almost always the first weekend in June, but sometimes if the first falls on a Friday or Saturday, as it will in 2018, it'll be the second week in June. So this year it's the first weekend in June. It starts Wednesday nights, our pre-con, get it on. So if you just want to show up at the hotel and just hang out and just see if it's something you might like to do, then you're welcome to show up. But again, the convention officially starts on Thursday, June 1st.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on to talk about the con, and we plan to be there and hope to meet our listeners there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is something to bring up, too, is that there aren't just special guests. There's a lot of industry people in there like Mike and Liz that show up. Jeff Tulanian, all the Frog God Games staff, the entire staff shows up there. They actually have their annual stockholders meeting at our convention. So if you're interested in meeting people in the industry, too, not just special guests, it's really a great convention to go to.
Yeah, and John Peterson, who wrote Playing at the World, tends to show up, not every year, but he tries to.
He shows up too. Like, he basically, and this is no lie, I'm exaggerating, a limo drives up to the hotel and he gets out of the back and like, oh, John Peterson decided to show up this year. So he just happened. He's not doing anything. Now, last year he was in Italy, so I don't fault him for not coming to the con.
Yeah, but being at the Riviera and then Italy, just when he could be gaming in North Texas, what's wrong with him?
He could be in Texas in the middle of summer. What's wrong?
Yeah.
But you know, the people and the gamers are the best part. Well, I mean, okay, I guess meeting the legends is great. but running into somebody who's like, yeah, I came from England. I just wanted to come try out some cool games. Like, really?
Well, awesome.
Best story in that regard, we do get international visitors. The best story in that regard is a few years ago, about a week before the convention, I had a gentleman from Russia ask me some particulars about the convention, and it turned out that he was having a family reunion in Dallas of his Russian family, and he wanted to come to our convention while he was in Dallas. Blown away. And he had actually heard about our convention where? On Mike and Liz's Save or Die show.
You're joking.
That's where he heard about it. And
you
so
two were on a podcast?
Boy,
actually, listen to the podcast. I'm in Russia, no less.
Wow.
Les showed up and had a great time, was a super nice guy.
I wish I could have met him.
I wonder if he was... Remember when we were playing in that Dungeon Crawl Classics game and there was a guy sitting next to us who was from Russia?
That might have been him.
I never caught that he was from Russia, but yeah, I remember him. He was cool.
It's like, that might have been that guy. But if it was, he never said anything about Save or Die or anything.
Yeah. He was a good gamer.
Should talk to the more. Said, hey, I'm Liz, damn it. I'm Liz.
Talk to me.
I'm Gumby, damn it.
It's the people that make the con, and it's just really, really fun to hear people from all over the world, and all over the United States, definitely, but sometimes all over the world, that they decide they're going to try it out. And just sometimes they just literally jump in a plane. Or a couple of years ago, we had somebody who heard about our show on Save or Die, heard about the NTRPG show, and jumped in their car in Mississippi and just drove to the con and had a great time.
Mississippi.
I think it was Mississippi. Alabama. I get all those southern states mixed up.
Well, maybe anywhere. It was Alabama.
Mike and I kind of did the same thing, though, back when they had that Milwaukee Games Fest, and it was before the North Texas Con like
2002,
started.
2002, 2003.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike and I heard about it because there was going to be an old school gaming track going on at that convention. There was going to be a AD&D tournament there.
20.
And if... Yeah, 1E, and if you got to the end, the very last round was going to be DM'd by Gary Gygax himself.
Oh, wow.
And we were so excited about a convention that was going to actually have AD&D on its schedule that Mike and I decided we're going to go to this, and we bought plane tickets and decided to make this, you know, this is going to be our 10th wedding anniversary gift to ourselves. We're going to go to this convention.
Yeah, 2003.
And we're going to play and we're going to have a good time. And we did it solely because we heard that there was going to be first edition AD&D there. And at the time, that was just amazing to us.
Now, that's one of the reasons we started our con. That's one of the reasons, because there weren't a lot of conventions doing that back then.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping in a car or a plane and heading to a convention you don't know anything about can work out. And so, like Mike and Liz, we've had that. I've talked to more than one person over the years that have done exactly that. We had a few years before that, we had a family that were going on vacation to Houston and from Colorado, and they just happened. He probably heard about it on Save or Die, too. Who knows? I might as well give you all credit for that one, too. But he heard about the convention somewhere. And so on their way to Houston, they just pulled over the hotel, stopped, and they ended up having so much fun that the father and his son stayed, and his wife and daughters ended up driving to Houston and leaving them behind. And they gamed all weekend, and the wife picked them up on the way back. So I always thought that was funny, too. But yes, that's sometimes that can happen. And I would definitely hope that would be something that would happen if y'all decide just to stop in.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on to the show. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, Mike, it sounds like you basically started off with a gathering of friends in your backyard, and you just made your backyard bigger and keep inviting people over. Pretty awesome.
That's pretty what it is, yeah.
Tomorrow, the world.
as long as it fits in the backyard.
Got to promise me now that we got to have a post-con show now, too, because that's actually usually better than the pre-con shows.
What a great idea. We've never done that before. That'd be awesome.
That and top secret, yeah.
Hey, yeah.
We're all going to be there.
We could about the con, but it's top secret.
We could do a during con show, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, now that we got some gear, maybe we can. All right, well, say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Yep. Appreciate it.
Good night, everybody.
Free Ark. And we're out.
The Safer Half Podcast is a production of the Mud Puppy Games Network and the Gagman Podcast. The Safer Half theme music is provided by the band Mississippi Bones. You can find them at mississippibones.bandcamp.com. All player characters mentioned in this podcast are fictional, and any resemblance to PCs living or dead is purely coincidental. No NPCs were harmed in the making of this podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Safe or Half.
I'm more than 20, like I'm 60, living high.